It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo, South America, Australia, France, Germany, UK, Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, crmw.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. And here we go, off and running on this 8th day of June 2023. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. And that's also where you go if you'd like to be part of the merry, wacky, zany, real-time, madcap, multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room in the 3 hours in which this program is live, Monday through Friday, 5 to 8 p.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 2 to 5 p.m. Pacific Daylight Time. All time zones in between and the great globe round. Whatever time it is when you're listening to the program. And if you do pop into the aforementioned Merry Wacky Zany right about now when you're listening live, well, you'll be greeted by the early arrival crew. That would be Theo and Squeaky and Ralphs and Claire and Anatole. Hey, gang. Good to see y'all. Sorry about yesterday. But if you're listening to the podcast, pretty please, whatever time, wherever, please be so kind as to like or follow or, you know, whatever the podcast platform calls it, this podcast, and maybe make a comment, just anything, really, just to let the algorithms know we're there, and maybe share it on social media. Help grow the little community we have here, because it is special. Indeed. Now, hi, I'm Robin. Did I do the hi, I'm Robin? I'm Robin. And yeah, for the sake of just making sure everybody knows, this program is live. It absolutely is. And let me make my apologies. Monday was a mess, and yesterday was a mess. I don't know. There's just something going on. There are a lot of demands upon my time right now. And as a consequence, I missed Monday and I missed yesterday. And you may trust and believe that when I do, and it's unplanned, I'm an unhappy lady. I'm so sorry. Okay, Lee, the HeadOn.live banner still says you will not have a show yesterday. Well, I'm still not having a show yesterday. Please request its removal. I think you just did, Lee. Thank you for that. Thank you. And so every program here at The Horn begins with gratitude, and this program is no different. And so as a consequence, we say thank you to our 8th and 7th day of the month subscribers via PayPal. Thank you very kindly to Sue up in the Great Northwest, Fort Earth. And thank you to Marcia. And thanks as well to our anonymous internet friend who provided a Have a Show on Me. Thank you so much. That kept things from being quite so awful. Thank you. Cut down on the awful to a considerable degree, in fact. Thanks as well to James Thank you to David up in Oregon. Thank you to Barbara for jumping in. So, with all that having been said, and sincerely, thank you. Well, what that means is that we are at $1,300 in terms of fundraising and getting caught up. So that's basically today and Tuesday and Friday and part of last Thursday. So if we could knock some of that out, that would be wonderful. But thank you so much for the Have a Show on Me. That means a lot. I wish I wasn't running hither, thither, and yon, but there are just things going on right now that demand my time, and there's not a lot I can do about it. I'll try to you know, do a better job of letting y'all know, but I didn't know yesterday that I wasn't going to be here until, you know, it became obvious that I was not going to get here in time. So, again, my apologies. And I don't know, there's a bunch of little dots on the family calendar, me taking Margie to doctor's appointments and things like that, because, you know, when her guy is off at work with the car and things, you know, things of that nature. I mean, family is complicated, and it never stops being that way. But let me, oh, Claire, that picture, that Yellowhammer is just beautiful. I don't know if that's the same Yellowhammer. I don't mean that specific Yellowhammer. I don't know if the English Yellowhammer is the same as the Yellowhammer that's the official state bird of Alabama. But I've in Alabama they say Ramajama a Yellowhammer, because they can't pronounce the R's real good. Why is that there? Okay, look, it's Thorn in the Side Thursday. Let's get busy. Pat Robertson is fucking dead. Hey! I posted something that our pal Michael in Madison sent along to me. It's on my Twitter and Facebook and Instagram pages. And just a picture of the rainbow flag and the word pride. Pat Robertson is dead, everybody. And there has been much rejoicing. And there's an old joke out there that I tell from time to time about a woman who walks past a newsstand every day, and she stops and she buys a paper. And she looks up above the fold, and she looks below the fold, and then she sets the paper down and walks away. It goes on for a while. And finally, the news agent looks at her and says, "Hey, lady, you pay for the paper. You can take the paper with you." And she goes, "No, I don't need it. I was just looking to see if someone had died." And the news agent says, "Yeah, but you don't even open it to the obituaries." And she says, No. "When this son of a bitch dies, it'll be on the front page." Ba-dum-bum. I felt like a little bit like that with the demise of Marion. Well, former liquor supply officer and senator's son, Marion Pat Robertson, gone to his long home at the age of 93. And as one person remarked, and I laughed merrily about this, if I die and go to heaven and find that Pat Robertson is there, I'm going to shit in my hand and throw it at God. Yeah. I understand the sentiment. And let's take a moment, just because it's the right thing to do, let's take a moment and remember one of those great incidents in the life of former liquor supply officer Marion Pat Robertson. This is 2013 on the 700 Club. The 700 Club, of course, got its name because in its earliest incarnation, he was looking for 700 people who would support his ministry. Yeah. Here we go.
You know what they do in San Francisco, some of the gay community, they want to get people, so if they've got the stuff, they'll have a ring, you shake hands, and the ring's got a little thing where you cut your finger.
Really?
Yeah, really. I mean, it's that kind of vicious stuff, which would be the equivalent of murder.
If they've got the stuff. Marion, was referring there to HIV and said that gay people were going around San Francisco deliberately transmitting a deadly virus. Really? Really? No. He was an inveterate liar. And that's why if there's a hell, he's in it.
It feels kind of warm here in heaven today.
Pat, this isn't heaven. Coffee break's over. Back on your heads. What? Oh, where are they going with those pineapples? Yeah. This is the same Pat Robertson who, in the aftermath of the terrorist attacks of September 11th, 2001, agreed in conversation with Jerry Falwell of the Moral Majority that 9/11 was brought on by the gays. Yep. The gays caused God to get mad and make those planes fly into those buildings and the Pentagon. And corkscrew into the dirt in Shanksville, PA. Meanwhile, in New York City, it being Pride Month and all, I keep a supply of them handy here for just such moments as this. I will be sacrificing a rubber chicken at midnight to the goddess of irony because this is a good one. Oh, good goddess. This was a dandy. Dropping Pat Robertson during Pride Month was just really creative. Blessed goddess. Of course, they come in threes, so I'm thinking, no. And our friend from long past, Sandra, used to call in. I don't know if you're still there, Sandra, but I miss you. Sandra used to call in, and we'd talk about Pat Robertson, and Sandra would yell, "Glory call!" Well, Pat got his glory call today. And I wonder if there are any actual decent human beings who are sad that he died. Yeah, just that's how my brain works. Is there anyone, and I better not hear, a damn word from our very good president offering condolences on the passing of a right-wing monster who immiserated millions. But as I was saying, it's Pride Month, and there was a little Pride celebration going on in New York City. And then the news came out that Pat Robertson was dead, and this was the response. Something, isn't it? Randy Radar says, Pat Buchanan is still alive? I don't know. I was thinking about Kenneth Copeland, Jimmy Swaggart. I mean, you know, there's somebody else in Stoke the Stroke. I don't even know what he died of apart from being 93. Aaron Reed said today, 20 years ago, gay marriage bans swept the United States. Pat Robertson was on TV, every major news network fueling them with his fundamentalist rhetoric. He was the Matt Walsh of that fight. He lost. He will not be missed, nor will his replacements in today's war against trans people. And that was what engendered that thought. See what I had there? Wondering if there are any decent people. I mean, you know, I'm sure there are people who are sad he's dead. I just wonder if they're decent. Because I know a lot of decent people who aren't. Yeah, I hope that makes sense. Is Pat Buchanan still? I don't know. One article I read said the LGBT community hasn't been this happy. Well, actually, it was over at a publication called Into. Today, the gay internet is more joyful than we've seen since perhaps the death of Antonin Scalia. The reason? Well, because ding dong, yet another witch is dead. Yep. And of course, I remember, and maybe like Right Wing Watch or somebody will put together a former liquor supply officer, lowest lows, reel. I remember when he advised a woman who wrote in about shopping for clothing at a thrift store and buying a secondhand sweater, and he said, you know, those sweaters can have demons in them. There were demons everywhere for Pat, and I hope some of them were real, and they came and flew him off to hell. Scary Jerry says, Pat Robertson, seriously, hornistas, join me in a prayer circle. I need 700 horn listeners. You bring just $2. Our hellbound prayers will give it will give him an extra 20,000 pounds lower in hell and a neat new pair of napalm underwear. I didn't even wish Rushbo the hell I wish on this turd. Him and the groomer priests are the great reason true religion has been lost on this age. Show love, hornies. Just 700 listeners, $2 apiece. Thanks. Thanks, Jerry. Neat new pair of napalm underwear. Thank you, Ralph, serving as the Horn Ad Hoc Pat Robertson Research Department. Pat Robertson is still among the quick. He is 85. And still a disgusting little fascist. Thanks, Ralphs. And in New York says, I can imagine him saying, it must be heaven. Rush Limbaugh is here. And look, there's Tony Scalia. Susie Madrak over at Crooks and Liars wrote, Pat Robertson is dead. Hell plans massive. Welcome party. Now, when I asked, were any decent people upset about it, I can't find any. Got my little lantern up, and I'm going to door, but no. Keith Boykin tweeted, Pat Robertson, the right-wing televangelist and former Republican presidential candidate who espoused racist, sexist, misogynistic, homophobic, AIDS-phobic, xenophobic, Islamophobic bigotry on air for decades, has died. Yes, he's pining for the fjords, singing with the bleeding choir eternal. One of the sharpest wits on the internet, the rude pundit. Well, his rudeness said, Pat Robertson was an infection on this country who poisoned nearly every aspect of our lives and got away with it because it came with a thick coating of Christian bullshit. He spread lies, hate, and fear, and we will never fully recover from his damage. So, fuck him forever. And a reminder of the words of Clarence Darrow, who said, I've never killed a man, but I have read many obituaries with great pleasure. Thanks, Lee. Jimmy, in the Great Northwest, Pat Robertson, another one bites the dust. And Cynthia in the Bay Area, yay! And good riddance! You know, I don't celebrate the demise of most people, just a few monstrous ones, and he who deserves to be nameless today is the one of those few. I would normally wish him to rest not in peace, but that would be silly. He's not resting. He's dead and will always be dead here and forever after. We know the filth he spread and the damage he did, so I will just wish him good riddance. And the rest of that phrase, Cynthia, to bad rubbish. Hear, hear, and amen. Oh, wait. Oh. I wish I knew where the damn cowbell is, because this is so cowbell worthy. Randy Radar. He's an expat. Ah. Cowbell, cowbell, cowbell. Oh, thank you for finding that, Flavio. The Pat Robertson supercut from his retirement. But this will do for now, Flavio notes. The bells are pealing to welcome him into the bowels. Yay, the bowels of hell. So let's see what we got here. Just 1 second. Here we go. Pat Robertson Supercut.
Pat Robertson's retirement after 60 years in broadcasting with Now That's What I Call Yikes. You'll get classics like Homophobia.
You've got a couple of same-sex guys kissing. Well, that makes me want to throw up. And their weird way of doing sex.
Racism.
Like in the 30s, the blacks were self-sustaining. They were in business. And what happened? What is this mac and cheese? Is that a black thing?
Misogyny.
I don't think we condone wife beating these days, but something's got to be done.
Islamophobia.
In the Quran, it's appropriate and permissible to have sex with little babies.
Transphobia.
Transgenders. This is nonsense. It's just a fraud. We don't want men going into women's bathrooms.
Order now and you'll also receive Blaming Haitians for their devastating earthquake.
They got together and swore a pact to the devil.
And the unforgettable Let Drug Addicts Die.
Well, I'm starting to.
Order now.
That was from The Daily Show. Thank you, Flavio. And every one of those was a real, genuine, no kidding, Pat Robertson clip. Good God, he's awful. And he's really awfully dead. And I know, nil nisi bonum, but nil nisi bonum does not apply to Pat Robertson. And he's going to stay dead. As will we all at some point in time. Oh, and thank you, Ralphs. Ralphs wants to get us started this evening and get us down below $1,300 with a $25 challenge for Pat Robertson meeting Rush Limbaugh's in hell. Don't forget the fat dead Tony Scalia trifecta there, Ralphs. Thank you, Ralphs. So, if somebody's got $25, Ralphs will turn it into $50. Ralphs is awesome that way. Oh, and other greatest hits, Dave and the Vine pointing out. Not to mention that he alleged that he lifted 1,000 pounds during a leg press, courtesy of Jesus, and his branded protein shakes. He was the son of the United States Congressman and got a cushy position in the uniform of the United States Marine stateside while his Marine brethren went off to war. I wish he didn't have to have bone spurs like certain other Republican asslicks, your buddy David the Blind. P.S. I hear it from my contacts in hell that he will be receiving a 1,000-pound weight added to him during his extraction process at the Pat Robertson Memorial Juice Bar. Not only pineapples, grapes, and oranges will be used, but various forms of cacti. Yes, indeed. And remember, he also hustled a Sea of Galilee mud mask and dabbled in blood gold and blood diamonds in Africa. There's a lot for old Scratch to work with in Pat Robertson. So let's be done with that. And how about a little bit of today in January 6th? Because we've got a new arrestee. The new arrestee has been charged with interfering with law enforcement officers during a civil disorder, entering a restricted building or grounds, disorderly conduct, and impeding passage through Capitol grounds. This particular individual grabbed up a police shield and used it as a weapon against police on the during the domestic terror attack on the Capitol of the United States on January 6, 2021. He stole the shield, by the way, but somehow has managed not to be charged with larceny. And this maggot, it might be recognizable to you, because this maggot is an actor, and he's been on Arrested Development. He's been a voice on Bob's Burgers. He's been on Better Call Saul. Yeah, Jade Johnston, 54 years old. And he was identified by the 13th Internet Sleuthing Brigade, who looked at screen caps of him, and someone eventually went, "Hey, I saw that guy on Better Call Saul." And he has credits on the Sarah Silverman program as well. He often plays cops. That's ironic. And was the voice of Jimmy Pesto, a restaurant owner and rival of Bob, of Bob's Burgers. He got bounced off of Bob's Burgers in 2021 after people noticed that he was participating in the January 6th gang of terrorists. Gee, I hope it doesn't hurt too little. So, you know, prison time? Please? Thank you? And wow, another anniversary. 5 years without Bourdain today, Brother Deacon Asa reminds us. Yeah. That one hit hard. Sure wish he could have stuck around so we could have actually benefited from his thoughts on, say, things like January 6th. Well, I've got something to grieve on June the 8th, and it damn sure ain't Pat Robertson. Thanks for reminding me, Brother Deacon. And, you know, I try to resist. Remember, Jay Johnston played cops on a lot of TV shows. I try to resist the notion that you've probably seen the hashtag ACAB, all cops are bastards. But you don't have to look too far to find further evidence thereof. We just had an email from Dave in the blind, and so naturally I have to have a Talibandiana story. Marion. There's Marion again. Oh, the goddess is working hard today. Marion? The Marion Talibandiana Police Department hired a new cop named Chaz Foy. He started work on Monday and was fired yesterday, according to Marion Talibandiana Police Chief Angela Haley. Chief Haley noted in her statement that some racist posts were brought to her attention from Chaz Foy's personal Facebook account. And she said they were not in keeping with the standards of the Marion Police Department. I do not condone this type of behavior and will not tolerate it. Grant County, Talibandiana. Someone gave Channel 27 News and Entertainment for Grant County the posts in question. They forwarded them to the Marion PD. And he looks strikingly like the cop from the Village People. Oh, really? It was June 1, 2022, when he posted a photograph of Derek Chauvin kneeling on George Floyd's neck and captioned, With gas hitting 489 and climbing, let's all take a moment to appreciate better times. Then there was a picture of a random black guy that was captioned Martin Luther King, L-O-O-T-E-R. Why didn't they take a look at his social media before they hired him? I mean, I'm glad they fired him. Maybe he can go and get a job with a more racist police department. Jesus. Yeah, just some random thorns in the side. The Daily Beast had an interesting story today. Comes out of Moldova, a neighbor of Ukraine. Where there was a couple described as hipsters who ran what was called a pagan home decor shop and were known for posting anti-war views. Yeah, it turns out they're agents of Vlad Putin, Daddy Vladdy. 37-year-old Alexei Losev and 33-year-old Anna Travnikova, sanctioned Tuesday by the U.S. government for their role in the government of the Russian Federation's destabilization campaign and continued malign influence campaigns in Moldova. They ran a workshop called Yuloikter by Perko. They offer exclusive pagan home decor and specialize in Yule lanterns. Posted things like, "In all my life, I have not met single person who would want war, and despite this, wars in our world continue to occur with enviable regularity. I feel pain and powerless." That was Alexei Losev. However, the freshly sanctioned Russians operated as malign influence agents in a large global information operation connected to the Russian Federation that targets Ukraine, countries bordering Ukraine, including Moldova, Balkan countries, the European Union, the United Kingdom, and the United States. They're accused of provoking, training, and overseeing anti-government activities in Moldova while maintaining ties to Russian intelligence services. And, of course, Moldova is part of another Russian campaign to try to destabilize the Moldovan government. Meanwhile, in the Russian-occupied portion of Ukraine, the human and environmental devastation from the destruction of the dam continues. Putin's faux pagans, Theo asks. Yeah, sorry. We all have to deal with our little demons from time to time. I don't know why I put it that way. That was weird. Oh, let's see.
Oh, where else? What else? Or this thorn in the side Thursday. There was a knife attack recently in a resort town in a lakeside park in the French Alps. Four very young children were attacked and two adults. The French Prime Minister, Elizabeth Bourne, said a terrible tragedy took place. Little children were savagely attacked by an individual in a park. We are shocked by this despicable act. When children are affected, I think we're all deeply touched. Not so much. No. I mean, hell. At least the attacker didn't have a gun. There'd be a lot more dead. And children getting hurt or killed. Here in the United States, that's just a day that ends in Y. In fact, some interesting numbers. In 2021, gun deaths in the United States hit their highest level ever. In the United States in 2021, one person died of gun violence every 11 minutes. 2021 was the second all-time high because 2020 was the previous all-time high. A little bit more granular. Well, 48,830 Americans died as a result of gun violence in 2021. 26,328 of them were suicides involving a firearm. 20,958 were homicides. The suicide rate was an 8.3% increase over 2020. That was the largest one-year increase in over 40 years. The gun homicide rate went up 7.6%. The firearm homicide rate rose 45% from 2019 to 2021. Interestingly, the homicide rate for murders committed without a gun only went up 7%. The lead author of the study, Ari Davis, the study, U.S. Gun Violence in 2021, an Accounting of a Public Health Crisis, Ari Davis said guns are driving this increase. I think in some ways that's not surprising because we've seen large increases in gun purchasing. We've seen a large number of states make it much easier to carry a gun in public, concealed carry, and to purchase a gun without having to go through some of the vetting process that other states have. And the homicide rate among racial and ethnic minorities is horrifying. 2019 to 2021, gun homicides increased by 49% in the African American community and 44% in the Latinx community. It was even worse among the indigenous community at 55%. And, of course, in 2021, even with COVID ravaging the country, gun deaths outstripped COVID-19, car crashes, and cancers as the leading cause of death among children and teens, especially black children and teens. Two-thirds of the gun deaths for children and teens were homicides. The study also says millions of first-time purchasers, including black and Hispanic, Latino people, and women of all races and ethnicities, bought guns during the pandemic at unprecedented levels. And for any lurking fans of the National Ruble Association, states with the lowest gun rates in 2021, gun death rates in 2021, have some of the strongest gun violence prevention laws in the country. For instance, if one lives in Mississippi, Stan, one is 10 times more likely to die of gun violence than if one lives in Massachusetts. Massachusetts has the strongest gun laws and ranks lowest. Mississippi practically gives them out on the guns out on the streets and has the highest gun violence rate. Gun violence death rate in the country. As far as the early data they're getting for 2022, the aforementioned Ari Davis says, we're seeing about the same level in the preliminary data in 2022 as we saw in 2021. So it's smoothing off, but it's not dropping back down to what we saw pre-pandemic. Damn. Thank you, Christopher. Christopher just jumped in. 655 times 2 to go. Thank you, based on what Scary Jerry said, yeah. So we the first $10 have been met of Ralph's challenge. Thank you, Christopher. 15 to go on that challenge. And John in Central PA. Subject, Russian propagandists. The two co-hosts at the Young Turks have been pushing what seems to be Russian propaganda. They think Ukraine sabotaged their own dam. Well, to be fair, John, it's not just the co-hosts over at the Young Turks. That theory has been posited in just about every news story I've read about it. The UN said that they could not assign culpability or responsibility with confidence. But logic suggests that it probably was the Russians, because the much-awaited spring counteroffensive by Ukraine is underway, and this just made it a hell of a lot harder. I mean, we've heard of tactics called scorched earth. I guess this is submerged earth. Right. And it makes Ukraine's effort extremely difficult. So I'm inclined to think the Russians did it. They benefit from it. the language being used to describe it is horrifying. Cataclysmic, biblical. And then there's a bit of a today in Florida or today in Monkey Up Declantis. Ah, dear. Monkey Up, like I've said before, and to think we used to think that Mitt Romney was a cold fish. Monkey Up Declantis is making it abundantly clear that, or abundantly plain that, by comparison, Bishop Willard, Senator Bishop Willard Romney is Mr. Personality. By comparison. And this is just gross. So he's been campaigning in New Hampshire, and he's campaigning in Iowa. And the guy is just incapable of connecting with actual human beings. He's the monkey up bot. He was at a meet and greet in Iowa. Still waiting for the classic photo, because it's that time of year of monkey up filleting a corn dog. So at this particular meet and greet, someone who probably wanted to see Monkey Up succeed, said, Governor, how about this? We have a World War II veteran with us today. Now, imagine if someone told Joe Biden that. Joe Biden would stop everything and say, "Where is he? I want to meet him." No. That's not Monkey Up style. Kyle Griffin over at MSNBC said DeSantis gave a nod in the veteran's direction, flashed a thumbs up, thanked him for his service, and turned back to somebody else waiting for a photo with him. That's when Kim Reynolds, the maggot governor of Iowa, hollered over to Monkey Up and said, "Our veteran, our World War II veteran, would also like to have your autograph, governor." And so he scrawled his name on a piece of paper, handed it off, and kept moving to the next person. And then somebody said, "Hey, do you know there's a World War II veteran here today?" Because, see, World War II veterans are getting kind of scarce. Because even the beginning of World War II for the United States, it had been going on for a couple of years for the rest of the world. But for American World War II veterans, goodness gracious, someone who entered the military, and a lot did, on December the 8th, 1941, would have been born in 1923. That person would have been 100 years old this year. And so you move, you depart downward as the war proceeds for the United States to people who are in their mid to late 90s. Monkey Up Duclantis, who's been having a rough week, and one hopes it only gets rougher. Monkey Up Well, he just doesn't seem to have the ability to actually care about them and anyone. One of my favorite Monkey Up tales is that, and this is just, this is, I mean, there's nothing particularly disgusting about this, but it's probably still going to strike you as ooky as it did me. People have talked about how Monkey Up, eats pudding with his hands. In fact, Nitwit Nero's campaign has already made an entire an entire campaign ad about it. I wish I was kidding. I am not. Pudding fingers is the ad. Well, let's see if we can get the Yeah, we'll have to deal with an ad, a different ad first. Oh no, that's the actual Pudding Fingers ad. There's a disposable cup of chocolate pudding sitting on a table, and a man approaches it.
Ron DeSantis loves sticking his fingers where they don't belong. And we're not just talking about pudding. Ron DeSantis loves sticking his fingers where they don't belong. And we're not just talking about pudding.
And it shows a guy sticking three fingers in the pudding cup and then jamming all three fingers in his maw. The thing is, Nitwit Nero was actually found liable by a New York jury for putting his fingers where they damn sure didn't belong.
Thank you.
Trump group hits pudding fingers DeSantis in latest attack ad. Yeah, okay. I just want the ad. Oh, well. It's still gross. Interestingly, the maggot weirdos on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda call the ad, and I am not kidding, childish. Well, that's what this entire primary is going to be. Nothing if not childish. Pudding fingers. Pudding flinger. Well, that's true. Yeah, we asked that. I said, you know, when he gets mad, what does Ron Monkey Up DeClantis throw at the walls? It's obviously pudding. Meanwhile, David in South Carolina stands as a World War II vet. A vet who fought against Nazis in World War II went to a defascist rally and wanted an autograph from a Nazi, so I guess the vet now supports Nazis. That would, yeah. Or maybe his grandkids took him. Jesus. Monkey Up is so gross. And so, we get to this. Oh, wait a minute. Message from Roger in Oregon. Oh, deaths today. They do come in three. James Watt, thank you, Roger. James Watt also has died. This from the Washington Post. Remember James Watt? Reagan's Secretary of the Interior, wasn't he? Yeah. He was a nightmare. James Watt, combative Interior Secretary under Reagan, dies at 85. He died in Arizona, Stan. Actually, he died May 27th. The story, though, was today. He was a ignorant, combative, stupid, pissant, and one of the petty little things that I remember him doing was changing the seal of the Department of the Interior, which had a buffalo on it that happened to be facing to the left. Well, with the Reagan Revolution, James Watt insisted that the seal be redone with the buffalo facing right. He was a tireless Renfield for the oil and gas industry. Back then, the Wilderness Society and their director, William Turnage, said, "What is the worst thing that ever happened to America?" And Watt, in turn, it pissed and moaned that the environmentalists poisoned the press against me. And as Secretary of the Interior, his entire goal in life was to eliminate the idea that the people of the United States, as we the people, should own land. He despised the idea of federal public land. Lee reminds us that back when James Watt was in office, the old joke went, how much energy does it take to destroy the environment? 1 watt. I remember that one, actually. James Watt dead? Yay, says Cynthia. Another pig we could do without. And I remember him well. Under Reagan, we don't need to protect the environment. Jesus is coming, so let's trash it all. And if he weren't dead here and forever after, I'm sure he'd otherwise be surprised when he isn't resurrected to go to heaven. Sometimes I wish there was a God so people like that rat-fucking-filthy pig could burn in hell forever. Yeah, it's sometimes the concept of hell is rather comforting. But I often think that the James Watts of the world don't really believe in it. Or the Marion Robertson. They don't believe in it any more than we do. They probably believe in it less than we do. Yeah, back to Monkey Up. Frank in Iowa writes, "Monkey Up, you must be putting me on. Cowbell!" Cowbell. Thanks, Frank. Now, back in Florida, where Monkey Up isn't because he's busy trying to be president. Well, a report in the Orlando Sentinel says that corporations are avoiding Florida in droves for conventions and like because of the climate of hate and injustice that Monkey Up is fostering. There's a group out of California called AnitaB.org, A-N-I-T-A, capital B. They are female and non-binary employees of a technology group, or technology groups. They've got about 16,000 attendees for their annual Grace Hopper celebration. They usually hold that in Orlando. And it's kind of a big deal because it's the world's largest gathering of women in computing. Well, AnitaB.org said, "We will not return until this legislation is overturned and the state becomes more welcoming to all." laws that banned most abortions after 6 weeks of pregnancy, cracked down on illegal immigration, and lifted permit requirements for carrying a concealed gun in public, along with measures that organizers said were intended to erase the identities of and dignities of people from historically marginalized and excluded groups, including Black, Brown, LGBTQIA+, and Indigenous people. Wait. That's everybody but white people. Brenda Darden Wilkerson is the CEO at Anita B. She said, "We at AnitaB.org are very proud of our diversity because that diversity is our strength. We owe it to our community, to those women and non-binary technologists, to be vigilant. The Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses have also bailed out over political concerns. Those 7,000 nurses and exhibitors will go to Philadelphia instead. Gosh. So, let's see. Migrants are fleeing. So, the agricultural sector is going to suffer. The construction sector is going to suffer. The hospitality sector is going to suffer. And why? Because Monkey Up is absolutely dedicated to the immiseration of marginalized communities. What? Says Matt in San Francisco. Come on, universe. Folks, go in threes. Kissinger's still breathing. Just putting it out there. Oh, that would be perfect, wouldn't it? James Watt, Marion Robertson, Kissinger. Well, they're waiting with it. They're waiting with it with a 2-mile-long bomb train of pineapples for Henry. Kenneth Copeland, Jimmy Swaggart, like I mentioned earlier, Nitwit Nero. Thank you for putting that out there. This from Sup Dog. This just in the world of extreme sports, world-class assholes Pat Robertson and James Watt named to join Underworld All-Star Team playing squat tag in the Pineapple Patch of Perdition. Squat tag. Ow. In a way, you know, with the Pat Robertson news today, it's almost as though there wasn't supposed to be a prayer meeting Wednesday yesterday. Because this is just perfect. Oh, and from the Department of I Hope It Doesn't Hurt Too Much, or Hurt Too Little. Have y'all ever heard, I know Brother Deacon Asa has. Have y'all ever heard of Dave Ramsey? The guy's a gajillionaire, and he's a Christian broadcaster. Kind of like Pat Robertson. Only he does radio mostly. And he tells people how to live their lives and Christian finances and how to get rich for Jesus. Well, Dave Ramsey is being sued. Yes, he is. Because he started a company and the company went bust, and the purpose of the promise made by the company is that if you signed up and paid the company money, that they would get suckers, I mean, people, out of the timeshare obligations that they'd signed. I have never even been remotely tempted to sign on to a timeshare. But apparently there's a lot of people out there who were, and, well, sheep were born to be shorn. The name of the business was Timeshare Exit Team, TET. They brought in $200 million from rubes, customers, who wanted out from under their timeshares. I think it would have been cheaper to stay in the timeshare. Of the $200 million that they pulled in from the customers, $30 million of that went to Dave Ramsey. And he hustled it on his radio show. The 17 plaintiffs, said in the suit papers that they relied, to their detriment, on Dave Ramsey, Christian finance expert, who blathered on and on his radio show about how much he hates timeshares. And those 17 plaintiffs were counting on him to help get them out of the bullshit contracts that they signed one weekend when they were invited to come and have a free vacation, all inclusive, and all you had to do was sit through a presentation about timeshares. So then, even after it began to be obvious that TET, Timeshare Exit Team, was a fraud factory. Well, Dave Ramsey continued to hustle them. And when the fraud allegations were raised, Dave Ramsey said that, in the name of Jesus, it was all a conspiracy against the parent company, Reed Hine and Associates. The suit papers go on to say, instead of acknowledging the deception, Ramsey recorded a 9-minute radio segment in which he lashed out at anyone he felt to be responsible for Reed Hine's woes. Reed Hine, meanwhile, in the complaint, is alleged to have instructed customers to stop paying their timeshare fees and then ginned up some fake property deeds and told the people they were, the Marks, that they were free of their commitment. Then people figured out what was going on and started asking for their money back. And, well, Reed Hine fabricated excuses not to honor the promises or stopped returning their calls. Happy Hour Media Group, Timeshare Exit Team, and Dave Ramsey are all named defendants in the lawsuit. Sign the settlement check, Dave. And, of course, Dave is apparently a really gross guy to work for. Oh, and this, and it ties in to a certain extent with the Pat Robertson obituary. The Human Rights Campaign has declared for the first time ever a national state of emergency. They're citing the tsunami of toxic, vicious legislation in state legislatures all over the United States, and certain areas in particular. This year has set a record. The record it broke was last year's for anti-LGBTQ bills in those state legislatures. Over 70 bills passed with the Human Rights Campaign noting that 525 bills were introduced, almost all by Republicans. 220 of those bills affected trans people. There were 115 such bills in 2015. Now we're up past 500. So with the state of emergency, the Human Rights Campaign noted that LGBTQ families are threatened. Some have to flee. They even published a Know Before You Go guide so that people can know what they're facing. Kelly Robinson, the president of the Human Rights Campaign, said Florida, Tennessee, and Texas are the most hostile states, and that Monkey Up DeKlantis has weaponized his office. These laws are fueled by an anti-LGBTQ plus Republican establishment and coordinated, well-funded extremist groups like the Alliance Defending Freedom, Heritage Foundation, and the Family Policy Alliance, insistent on trying to control our families and lives. The Alliance Defaming Freedom said, "Well, that's slanderous. We're committed to religious liberty and parental rights and the sanctity of life." No amount of false accusations will deter us from our mission. Jeremy, we've talked about him. Well, we were talking about him on Tuesday, weren't we? Redfern, the spokescreep for Monkey Up, said, "This is a stunt." Oh, and by the way, a federal judge struck down, at least temporarily, Tennessee's odious ban on supposed drag shows. You know, the ban that makes it a drag show for a trans person to stop at the Rippy Mart and use the restroom. Or pump gas, for that matter. Good for the Human Rights Campaign. They also went on to note that Michigan and Minnesota, hi Jessica, hi Micah, were to be praised because they expanded LGBTQ rights in 2022-2023. So we've got a travel advisory in Florida. And we've got a national crisis. Oh, and by the way, the Southern Poverty Law Center, which is a specialist in the identification of hate groups in the United States of America, has for the first time, it's about time, included Moms for Liberty. Sit, Liberty, sit. Woof. Moms for Liberty on their list of hate groups. SPLC added 12 parental groups to their list of purveyors of hate. Tax exempt, too. In USA Today, they said the Southern Poverty Law Center is for the first time labeling Florida-headquartered Moms for Liberty and 11 other right-wing parents' rights groups as extremist groups in its annual report released today. SPLC Intelligence Project Director Susan Cork said Moms for Liberty and other organizations are being designated as anti-government extremist groups based on long-standing criteria. These groups are a new front in the battle against inclusivity in schools, although they are drawing from ideas rooted in, there it is, age-old white supremacy. The movement is primarily aimed at not wanting to include our hard history, topics of racism, and a very strong push against teaching anything having to do with LGBTQ topics in schools. We saw this as a very deliberate strategy to go to the local level. So the SPLC list now, and this is sobering, says that there are 1,225 active extremist hate groups in the United States of America. Meanwhile, outfits like the Daily Signal are having a hissy, saying that it's a perfectly normal mainstream group. No, it isn't. But it's not all just America. As I'm sure Claire and Jean and Anne and our other friends over there across the pond know, there's a lot of hate extant upon the Sceptred Isle. And now, transphobic English folk, well, I guess transphobic Scots and transphobic Northern Irish and transphobic Welsh, they're mad. They're really mad. I tell you, they're terribly, terribly, terribly put out. Because the British Library, which puts out information on social media, just interesting stuff, well, the British Library tweeted, I'm not kidding, about a fish. The fish is called the Maori Rasa, Rasse. And it's the Maori Rasa, Warasa, I don't know, has what the British Library described as a wondrous forehead, quite possibly bigger even than the forehead of Matt, it just gates worse. But they said its wondrous forehead isn't the most magnificent thing about it. Here's a new word to learn today. They are protogynous hermaphrodites, which means the females can later change sex to become males. The fish takes about 5 to 7 years to become sexually mature and changes from female to super males around their 9th birthday. They get an even more prominent hump and an even brighter color of blue and green. And the author of this article from them said, admittedly, it took me 23 years to transition from female to super male, but I must say, deeply relatable. Dude. But the British Library said, you know, they developed an even more prominent hump, even brighter color, blue and green, which makes them super attractive to females, the museum wrote. Ooh la la. Then there's the clownfish. All of them are born male, and as they mature, they become females. That was certainly the case with me. Which makes the next time you watch Finding Nemo a lot more interesting. As the article notes, it was clearly a nod on the part of the library to wishing people a happy Pride Month. And frankly, this Pride Month will be memorable as the Pride Month that took out Pat Robertson. Because irony can be deadly. But oh, oh, oh. The poor British Library got attacked online by droves of farts, you know, feminism appropriating reactionary transphobes, farts, having an absolute hissy. Are you saying gay men are actually women because fish? Another genius said, Pride Month is also a celebration of hermaphroditic fish. The British Library did eventually delete the thread, and that's kind of a pity. But God, the farts are so delicate and so dainty. Joanne Rowling probably went out and had a fish dinner just to, or maybe she, you know, went out of her castle in Scotland and went fishing. I wonder what the king is doing tonight. He's wishing he were fishing in Scotland tonight. Maybe Joanne went out and caught herself a fish and just bludgeoned the hell out of it because biological females. Ain't much that doesn't trigger them. Speaking of triggered, there's... Why, look, it's Clammy Granny. Oh, the Maori Rasa. Stephen New York says, clearly God is woke since he made this damn fish. She. God is woke, and she made that fish. Just saying. Yep. That one, Ralphs. Ralph serving as the ad hoc Horn Maori Rasa Research Department. They're also known as Napoleon fish. And they are blue, pretty fish. With a big old hump head. I knew a guy looked like that once. It's almost like this fish has a pompadour. But no. Yeah, Clanny Granny is also big mad at Big Gay. Why? Because the United States Air Force put out an image in a tweet. June is Pride Month. The Department of the Air Force proudly recognizes and celebrates generations of LGBTQI+ service members and their contributions to our Air Force and Space Force. And it is a silhouette of a member of the Air Force of indeterminate gender. And the photograph is of a bunch of clouds. It looks like a screen cap from High Flight from when I was little and get to stay up late and watch the TV stations go off the air. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced aloft on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and chased the shouting winds along, etc., etc., etc. But the silhouette of the airman is saluting, but because of the way the silhouette's drawn, you're not sure whether you're looking at their back or they're facing you. But overlaid over the picture of the cumulonimbus clouds is the white, pink, blue, brown, black, purple, blue, green, yellow, orange, red of the inclusivity flag. And over that, the seal of the United States Air Force with the phrase, Celebrate Pride Month. That's all it was. But that was enough for Clanny Granny. We salute one flag and one flag only in the United States of America.
It isn't the pride flag.
Do you think, I'm just curious, do you think she does her own social media? Just curious. And the purpose of my curiosity is to wonder if she's got somebody on her staff that writes that stupid shit for her.
Because my word, that's some dumb shit.
And she was quote tweeting Charlie Kirk, the man with the biggest head on the planet. Breaking, U.S. Air Force tweets image of soldier saluting the LGBTQI plus pride flag. No, that...
Okay, one, dipshit, Charlie Kirk. That's not a soldier. That's an airman. There's a difference.
Two, they're not... It's not a flag. It's just an... It's just stripes. And if it's a flag, it's actually one of those long banners that's often trailed around, over football games and the like.
Yeah, it didn't go well for Clanny Granny. A photograph of the maggots on January the 6th, 2021. Let's see, there's a urine-colored snake flag, a Trump 2020 flag, another Trump 2020 flag, a Confederate flag, another Trump 2020 flag, a couple of American flags. And someone says, which one of these is it, babe? Don't tell me, they're going to cancel the Air Force now. She got roasted. There is no flag in the image. There is a silhouette of a soldier, airman, standing in salute. The Air Force seal is present, and a rainbow pride banner is in the background. Even a one-dimensional mind should be able to view two-dimensional images. And then, of course, someone posted a photo of a maggot carrying the Confederate battle flag, the devil's diaper, past a portrait of Andrew Jackson in the Capitol of the United States. You know, die mad about it, lore. And because of the various problems we've had, technical problems, timing problems, that sort of thing. We've missed a couple of outbreaks of Second Amendment freedom. One outbreak was in Richmond, Virginia, on Tuesday, when seven people were shot after a high school graduation on the campus of Virginia Commonwealth University. The cops took two people into custody. No word on whether they went to Burger King. Three people suffered life-threatening injuries, and there were four injuries that were non-life-threatening. Six other people were hurt in the aftermath. Two fell, one was hit by a car and while running away, and three were treated for anxiety, I should say. It all happened in Monroe Park near Virginia Commonwealth University about 5:13 p.m. on Tuesday. It was near the Altria Theater, where they were going to host several graduation ceremonies for Richmond Public Schools. Richmond Mayor LeVar Stoney said that it was a selfish, senseless act. A child should be able to go to their graduation and walk up to graduation and enjoy the accomplishment with their friends and their families. It caused the cancellation of the Thomas Jefferson High School graduation. They closed all Richmond public schools yesterday out of an abundance of caution. Glenn Youngkin, the softer, gentler, kinder, gentler Trump governor of the Old Dominion, said, "My administration continues monitoring the terrible shooting in the heart of Richmond tonight." Yeah. Well, he's got other things to worry about, and you know what those other things are now, don't you? And then, of course, Second Amendment freedom also broke out in South Carolina, Stan. In Aiken, South Carolina, a 13-year-old girl was shot at Walmart which is located on a thoroughfare curiously known as Whiskey Road. That happened 7:34 p.m. last night, Wednesday. The little girl was shot in the arm and in the stomach. ...32-year-old Stephen Christopher Foreman called and told officers he was at a nearby KFC. Cops showed up and arrested him. When the cops got to Walmart, they found the young woman barely conscious, pale, showing symptoms of shock, you know, from blood loss. Closing the barn door after it's burned down and the horses have run away, the Aiken Department of Public Safety said they've charged Foreman with attempted murder and possession of a weapon during the commission of a crime. Yeah, he left his 45 caliber semi-automatic handgun in the greeting card section on the bottom shelf in the Walmart, and they found a 45 caliber shell casing as well. And the judge in the case has denied bond. The family, as well as the victim, are in shock. The victim, the 13-year-old little girl, has a very long road to recovery ahead of her. As a result of this injury, no telling how her career will be affected, no telling her mental state, according to a family member. It's going to take two or three more surgeries to get her repaired. Attempted murder carries up to 30 years in South Carolina prison. Possession of a weapon while in the commission of a felony. Well, that's only five. The one bullet that hit the 13-year-old went through her wrist and then through the side of her stomach. Her stomach is torn, and her daddy says the bullet is still lodged in her spine. Walmart responded saying that senseless violence is inexcusable, especially involving a teenager. Our thoughts are with this young girl and her family, and we're hopeful for her healthy recovery. Additionally, counseling services have been offered to our associates. We're grateful, just don't talk about needing a union. We're grateful for the swift response of law enforcement and will work with them in every way possible during their investigation, except for trying to keep guns out of Walmart. That was from senior manager Kelsey Bowl. No motive is known. And the victim and the Second Amendment lawful gun owner didn't know each other. Well, look, it's just what we do. It's what America is good at. And it's something we do not wish to stop. Because if we wish to stop it, well, no, that's wrong of me to say. A clear majority of Americans want something done to stop this, but the Republican Party doesn't want to do anything to stop this. There's hardly a Democrat that doesn't want to do something to stop this. But there are no Republicans who do. Doesn't that just say everything? And Ralph says, and Walmart and the Waltons send tots and pears. And well, their small army of lawyers is probably long since in the air to do damage control. And this bullshit will, our bullshit approach to gun ownership in this country will eventually end. Might be a couple of generations. Might be Gen Z that does it. But people like Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas and Sammy Bad Breath Alito and Anne's Boy Neil and the Handmaid and Brat and Old Balls and Strikes will have to go the way of Pat Robertson before it does happen. But one of these days, somebody is going to wise up, actually read the Second Amendment, channel their inner originalist, and realize that the word own guns does not appear in the Second Amendment. Keep and bear arms, not own arms. Keep and bear is there. And I'm so glad it's warm weather. I'm so enjoying keeping bear arms. Just love it. Sorry. Okay. Any opportunity I ever get to mock the Second Amendment, I'm going to do. I'm going to take that opportunity. Because it is the dumbest, bloodiest, most hateful anachronism from the 18th century that yet exists in the 21st. And as I've said before, there is no way that the framers of the Constitution did not know what they were doing when they made a distinction between keep and bear versus own. And 13-year-olds pay with their internal organs, or their lives, or their blood. And I mentioned Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. The Supreme Court did a thing today. And it was kind of surprising. But lo and behold, in a 5-4 ruling with Brett Kavanaugh and Old Balls and Strikes actually joining Ketanji Brown Jackson, Sonia Sotomayor, and Elena Kagan, the Supreme Court ruled that the state of Alabama is going to have to redraw its legislative district map and create two majority black voting districts, congressional districts. It will wonders never cease. The Supreme Court had previously let the corrupt map stand for the 2022 elections, which resulted in six maggot Republicans winning and one Democrat winning. The one Democrat, Terry Sewell, is in a district in Alabama, the district in Alabama that was deliberately drawn to create one black majority district, and then everybody else was sort of all other African American communities were thoroughly watered down to make sure that they could pose no threat to Republicans seeking office. The suit was brought under the Voting Rights Act of 1965, and it's surprising because The McCutcheon case is the Supreme Court case from, 2017? Maybe earlier? That old Balls and Strikes wrote that declared there ain't no racism in America anymore, and pre-clearance in the historically Jim Crow voting rights violating states was no longer needed. And having had some years now on the court to realize what a really stupid thing that was to believe, old Balls and Strikes grabbed up Brat and said, no, you're going to redo this map. So now what Alabama will do is they will drag their heels.
May it please the court, we're having a real hard time putting together these here Negro districts. You just don't know how many they are here.
The black population in Alabama is 25% of the overall population of the state. When I read the account of this earlier today, I was thinking, they did. You remember when black voters in Alabama kept a pedophile out of the United States Senate? Remember Roy Tola Moore? And Alabama actually had a Democratic senator for a minute in Doug Jones. That's why the Republicans are fucking scared to death. The lower federal court had already decided that the state of Alabama had violated the Voting Rights Act. And the court let stand that decision. But wait, you'll notice that the 5-4 decision, the five, again, were Balls and Strikes and Brat, Ketanji Brown Jackson, Elena Kagan, and Sonia Sotomayor. Guess who's not there? That's right. Old Clarence Pubes on the Coke Can Fappy Thomas. Because of course not. No, he wrote a 49-page dissent talking about how pissed off he was about the result in Allen versus Milligan. That was the name of the case. Oh, and he was mad. He said, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act is nothing more than a racial entitlement to roughly proportional control of elective offices, limited only by feasibility, wherever different racial groups consistently prefer different candidates. And you're going to require Alabama to intentionally redraw its long-standing congressional districts so that black voters can control the number of seats roughly proportional to the black share of the state's population. Constitution doesn't say that. The Voting Rights Act don't say that. And if it did, the Constitution would not permit it. Now, Section 2 of the Voting Rights Act prevents gerrymandering congressional districts for purposes of disenfranchising minority voters. But according to Thomas, who does like to throw the occasional turd in a punch bowl. Well, Fappy said that if it was up to him, he would have said that the Voting Rights Act has no power at all to keep state legislators from racially gerrymandering districts. And keeping minority voters' electoral power diluted. He went on, said, I've long been convinced that the Voting Rights Act only regulates voters' ability to actually get to the ballot or cast it. But that's not what it says. Not at all. Not even remotely. But Alabama will. I haven't read the full opinion, so I don't know if there's any with all deliberate speed language in there to make sure nobody actually has to do anything anytime soon. And meanwhile, over at MSNBC, they detailed the heat that is slowly building around Har Har Crow. I done bought me a Supreme Court justice. Har Har Har!
Amid a drip, drip, drip of revelation after revelation after revelation that Justice Clarence Thomas repeatedly failed to disclose lavish financial gifts from billionaire and right-wing activist Harlan Crow, the Senate Judiciary Committee is pushing Crow for a full accounting of the extent of his financial relationship with Thomas. In a letter sent last night, and according to the Washington Post, the senators are, quote, asking Crow and three companies associated with him to provide an itemized list of gifts worth more than $415 that he has made to Justice Thomas, any other justice, or any justice's family member.
Well, see, there's a little bit of wiggle room there. Gifts worth over $415.
Well, they weren't gifts. I mean, they're just my friends. I mean, it's just what you do. I mean, you know, we do things for each other. You know, I say, Clarence picks up the check at lunch one day, and I send him a Cadillac.
as well as a full list of lodging, transportation, real estate transactions, and admission to any private clubs Crow may have provided. The letter emphasizes this information will help identify specific shortcomings in the statement on ethics, principles, and practices, as well as current law that legislation needs to address. Crow has given hints, however, that he may be as unwilling to disclose his financial particulars as Justice Thomas has been.
Damn right. I mean, it illegal as hell. If we can get a more solid Democratic majority in the Senate in 2024 and take back the House, maybe we can do something. Oh, and the voting rights case was Shelby County versus Holder. And that struck down Section 5 of the Voting Rights Act. I don't know why I said McCutcheon. That's the pre-clearance provision. And our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties said that, the formula they used to determine which states and localities had to follow Section 5 protocols was out of date. Hence, old balls and strikes declaring there's no such thing as racism in Alabama anymore. But, I think it was John in Central PA who asked me on Twitter as this case came out. Horse trading? Because every time the Supreme Court does something halfway decent, I get the most uncomfortable sensation that some evil shit is coming. There, another case came out today. Thursday is the day for announcing case decisions, by the way. In one of the dumbest cases that the Supreme Court has decided to take in a while, our most puissant Dread Sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties declared that Jack Daniels had a right to complain about trademark infringement against a company that makes dog chew toys. We talked about this stupidity a while back. The Jack Daniels Liquor Company, which has killed more people than anything the dog chew toy company ever did, is a jealous guardian of its intellectual and visual property. They sued, Jack Daniels did, a company that made a dog chew toy called Bad Spaniels, the old number 2 on your Tennessee carpet, with an image of a chagrined Cocker Spaniel on the label, and it looked a little bit, you know, except for the Cocker Spaniel part and the old number 2 on your carpet part, like the Jack Daniels label. The thing is, oh dear, it was a unanimous ruling. Jack Daniels said it was a violation of trademark law, and that somehow or another, some complete idiot out there might accidentally buy Bad Spaniel's old number 2 on your carpet chew toy thinking he was getting a bottle of really bad whiskey. Don't care much for whiskey anymore. Never cared much for Jack Daniels. You're buying the label because the whiskey in the bottle is ugh. The thing is, in the unanimous decision, Supremes did refuse to throw out the test that the appeals court, whom they overturned, had used in determining that, no, it wasn't a trademark infringement. Because what Jack Daniels really wanted out of all of this was a ruling that would have let corporate America sue any kind of entity that parodied their product. So I guess there's today's horse trade, John. But there's more stuff coming, and it will be bad. Students for Fair Admission versus Harvard and Students for Fair Admission versus University of North Carolina. The plaintiffs each have the same name. Gosh, I wonder if this is one of those tax-exempt grifts, one of these AstroTurf campaigns, right-wing campaigns of pissy white people, and you know Fappy will side with them, who are butthurt that there are black folks in Harvard and the University of North Carolina because, well, the University of North Carolina only started admitting African Americans to UNC earlier in this century. That's on the way. This one looks like, and this one has potential to be a disaster, because anytime one case goes the right way, you know, and we saw it last year, they're setting us up for some really nasty shit, especially right before they head out of town. Maybe Fappy can go to Indonesia, or maybe party in the Walmart parking lot with his RV, like he says he and Ginsurrectionist like to do. The Indian Child Welfare Act may go the way of the dinosaur. The Indian Child Welfare Act prevents the indigenous kids from being separated from their extended families and their tribes via adoption. And several right-wing families are challenging, along with the state of Texas. And the butthurt white folks say that, well, it's an unconstitutional racial preference, and it intrudes on state autonomy to let nice Christian white families adopt the heathen savage children and civilize them some. 303 Creative is still out there, too. Remember? That's the whiny woman who's afraid to actually open a business because she might have to design a wedding website for a gay couple. The case was argued by the Alliance Defaming Freedom, that gang of grifters and fascists. Don't leave out the fascists. The fascist part is probably more important than the grift part. And Moore versus Harper is still out there. That's out of North Carolina. That's the independent legislature theory that says, ain't no courts got no business meddling around when Republicans try to make sure that the wrong people don't get to vote. And make sure that if people do vote, and if the result is different from what the Republicans want, that the legislature can just overrule that shit. And can't no court do nothing about it. Today's decision about Alabama's map makes me wonder, because it tacitly said that the lower court had the right to enter the ruling that it did, and that its rationale was sound. And then there's the other case we talked about the butthurt Christian who didn't want to work on Sundays. Well, go to work for Chick-fil-A, dipshit. And then, of course, also out there and of considerable import to a lot of members of the Horn Family Community Congregation, Biden versus Nebraska, the student loan debt relief case, the forgiveness program. Our most puissant dread sovereign Supreme Catholic Majesties will decide whether the 2003 Heroes Act gives the President and the Secretary of Education the power to authorize federal student loan forgiveness. Sometime between now and July 1st, we'll find out what a true threat is. Because Coles Whalen, a singer-songwriter, was stalked by one Billy Counterman. She complained about the stalking. Billy Counterman was arrested, tried, and sentenced to 4.5 years in prison for the stalking and making true threats against Coles Whalen. Well, this involves a woman's right to not be tormented by a man, so you want to take a guess which way that's going to go? You can just imagine the handmaid writing that opinion and saying that it was her duty to submit to her stalker. That's exhausting. So my guess is the horse trading is in there somewhere. And my guess is it's in Counterman versus Colorado, Biden versus Nebraska, Groff versus DeJoy. That's the work on Sunday case. And, of course, 303 Creative. And that poor, persecuted, blonde Christian lady who is just disgusted by the gays and their weddings. In the name of Jesus, of course. Wow. Oh, by the way, Christopher got us started. We got $15 to go on Ralph's challenge, the Pat Robertson meets Rush Limbaugh in Hell challenge. Now, come on, let's celebrate that very idea. That's worth three people with $5 or one person with 15. I hate having to do this, but I also hate looking at fundraising holes approaching $2,000 as we enter the second week of June. Sorry. But it would be great if that could be met. Ralph's is so kind to put those challenges out there. Going back to the knife attack in Paris, Stephen, New York, says a man walked into a playground and stabbed four kids and two adults. All are in the hospital, but they're all still alive. Now imagine if the guy had a gun, precisely. And the entire country is horrified. France is horrified because this doesn't do that. Well, it doesn't. They are naturally horrified. Here in the greatest country in the history of the world on earth, now, today, forever, in the universe, under God. What? Just four kids and two grown-ups and a knife? We'll see if a good guy with a gun had done been there. Supreme Court. Emilio says, wasn't there previously a groundbreaking case of shit versus evil? Cowbell. Lee on the Christian who doesn't want to work on Sunday. When does this idiot think the Christian clergy work?
Well, they're not working, Lee. They're serving Jesus.
Lee didn't think much of my idea of a Democratic majority in 2024. Democratic majority? Stop it, Robin. Considering the filibuster, the Democrats need 65 or more votes. Otherwise, a Manchin or a Sinema can torpedo good legislation for their benefit. Lee, it's only 60 votes. And it may work out to our benefit. I know this sounds nuts, but it may work out to our benefit if actually... Make West Virginia great big old governor, Jimbo Justice, beats Manchin. I can't imagine Looney Mooney is going to do it. You know, beat Jim Justice in the primary. That really puts Nitwit Nero in a spot because... You know, him and make West Virginia great big old governor Jim Justice, and of course, well, I guess Jimbo probably has to leave baby dog at home, because you know that Nitwit Nero doesn't like being near wild animals like, you know, overweight bulldogs. Can barely walk. But he also endorsed the hell out of Looney Mooney for the congressional seat. Who's he going to endorse? Right? I need to check on something. I was afraid of that. Got to go to Missouri, Stan, for this one. The bloodthirsty Republicans there had a complete hard-on to murder a man named Michael Tesius in the name of the people of the state of Missouri. When Michael Tesius was 19 years old, he was in prison. In jail. And he and a cellmate hatched a cockamamie plot to bust his cellmate out of the joint. Hard cases make bad law. Michael Tesius was not okay. Michael Tesius was in jail because his life was a nightmare. As a child, Michael Tesius was neglected at a profound level. His childhood was almost nothing but violence and poverty. The parents who had him, who created him, did not even remotely care about him. The parents had little ability or interest in providing care to the little fella. He never got anything in the way of affection. They didn't even teach him how to take care of himself. No hygiene. His brother frequently beat him almost to the point of unconsciousness. When he would write about himself, it was clear he had no self-esteem. He wrote, he was in fourth grade when he wrote, "I'm weird, I'm stupid, I'm a weirdo, I'm ugly, I'm a moron, nobody likes me, I'm ugly, I'm a dork, a geekazoid, I'm a slob, I'm a geek, nobody loves me, I'm not worth a cent." He got sent to the Randolph County Jail in 2000, 19 years old, on a 30-day probation violation for some kind of theft. He shared a cell with a 27-year-old guy named Roy Vance. Vance was looking at 50 years hard time, and Vance began immediately to manipulate Michael Tesius. Vance said he was young and easily that Tesius was young and easily manipulated, and he said, "I took advantage of that." And tongue-in-cheek, he convinced Tesius to help him escape from jail after Tesius got out from his 30 days. He convinced Tesius to get out of jail, go get a gun, come back to the jail with the gun, order the guards into a cell, then hand the gun to Vance. Tesius promised that he'd come back and get him out. Tesius, among other things, had a talent for drawing. And so, when he came back to the jail, he panicked. And he killed two jail guards. In the statement he gave to police, he said, "I know what I've done was wrong, and will never be fixed. An officer asked me if I could go back and do it all over again, what would I do? I said I would kill myself to save their lives." The first time that Missouri gave him the death sentence, that wound up being vacated because they fucked up the evidence for killing him. The second trial, he had two private lawyers who were paid $10,000 apiece by the Missouri State Public Defender. And he got the death penalty. And since they were flat fee lawyers, they kind of mailed it in. there was an abundance of evidence that childhood trauma kept his little brain from developing right. Neuropsychological testing corroborates the frontal temporal striatal deficits that characterize Mr. Tesius's cognitive deficits. Like a toxic stream running through relatively healthy land, Mr. Tesius's frontal temporal striatal poisons much of his healthy cognitive functioning, rendering it vulnerable to impaired functioning, especially in new, novel, and stressful situations. But in the time he was in prison, he learned self-control. He has empathy for others. He shows empathy for the men he killed. He's no longer impulsive. He's seeking to make the best life he can in his current situation. Federal judge gave a ray of hope. Pausing the execution schedule because of evidence that one of the jurors from Tesius' trial couldn't read English, which the state of Missouri requires for jury service. The appeals court said, nuh-uh, kill him. And then it went to the Supreme Court, who said, yeah, kill him. And he was a talented artist. He painted murals in prison. Trees with flowers growing about the base and birds on the branches. A tree frog on a couple of green stems and roses and sunflowers and daffodils and daisies around. He donated some of his art to an auction to raise money for a domestic violence shelter. He said, in a world where I felt I had no control, art has given me that control and has allowed me to connect to my emotions as well as other individuals. It allows me to express myself when my words can't. The article from HuffPost closes saying, as his execution date approached, Tesius rushed to finish a painting with a motivational phrase on the wall of a rehabilitation unit for those in long-term segregation. He wanted to finish it before he was killed. And in fact, the good, God-fearing, upstanding, Bible-believing, Christ-centered, evangelical, fundamentalist, homosexual, Christian, Republican governor of Missouri, who professes to follow a man who was executed, murdered in the name of the state, said, nah, kill him. The article at the Kansas City Star says, curtains open, curtains close, witnessing the execution of Michael Tesius in Missouri. Katie Moore wrote, on Tuesday evening, two guards at a Missouri prison clicked their flashlights off, the room darkening for a split second, and opened a set of dark blue curtains revealing the execution chamber. The witnesses leaned forward, staring at Michael Tesius, who was lying on a gurney with a white sheet up to his face. His head was turned to the left towards his spiritual advisor, who was seated next to him. And so Republicans in Missouri finally got their fondest wish and killed a man who, when he was but a fetus, those same Republicans said, oh no, no abortions, he might grow up and cure cancer. Pleas poured in from around the world, begging Christian Missouri Governor Mike Parson not to murder him in the name of the state? They strapped him to a gurney and crucified him horizontally. p.m. Tuesday evening, the call came through from Missouri MAGA Attorney General Andrew Bailey. Yeah, the same guy that, never mind, who told the Department of Corrections that there are no legal impediments to murdering Michael Tesius in the name of the people of the state of Missouri. They called the governor's office, says, is there any reason not to proceed? And the governor's office said, kill him! Kill him real good! They gave Michael Tesius 5 grams of pentobarbital through an IV line. Then a 5-minute timer is set, the curtains are closed, then reopened, and the spiritual advisor, Melissa Potts Bowers, is out of the room. And Michael Tesius is dead. Christian Missouri Governor Mike Parson said, justice is being done in the name of Jesus. Michael Tesius' legal team said, today marks another sad chapter of America's perverse fascination with state-sanctioned homicide. It is not America's perverse fascination, counselors. It is the Republican perverse fascination. On his way out, shuffling off this mortal coil, Michael Tesius wrote, I'm holding tightly to my faith. It's all I have left to take with me. I'm sorry it had to come to this in this way. I wish I could have made things right while I was still here. I really did try to become a better man. I really tried hard to give as much as I could to as many as I could. I tried to forgive others as I wished to be forgiven. And I pray that God will forgive those who condemn me, just as he forgave those who condemned him. I'm sorry, and not because I'm at the end, because I truly am sorry. Members of the victims of his victims' families, and he is a victim too. Victims killing victims. Well, they were there. They wanted to watch him die. They didn't give a shit about how badly he got beaten or how much he'd been neglected. And the man who set it all in motion is just sitting in prison. That's all. It was just another day in the Missouri governor's office where the governor loves Jesus. And his final statement, Tesius' final statement, was compassionate and kind. But he said, he talked about forgiveness and how he felt obliged to forgive because Jesus forgave the people who murdered him in the name of the state. Well, lucky me, I'm not a Christian, so I don't have to do that weak-ass lammy bullshit. And I can despise Mike Parson and Attorney General Bailey and every Republican in the state of Missouri until the sun goes out. For the bloodthirsty monsters that they fucking are. Like I said, you know, the fetus fetish, he might grow up to cure cancer. Well, had that man been able to live out his life in prison, continued to paint and to give of himself, who knows whose lives he might have saved? But the party of life has no interest in such shit as that, because they don't need to save nobody in prison. We want to kill them too. I mean, it's what Republicans do. Holy crap. Is that for real, John, in Central PA? Let me check real quick. I don't want to get this wrong. John, where are you getting this? I see that Newt Gingrich testified before the January 6th grand jury. Tamara says, I think it's real, because what John in Central PA just wrote to me was, news just broke. Trump has been indicted on federal crimes. Apparently it's so fresh CNN doesn't have it. MSNBC doesn't have it. They do have an article that says Trump's amped up victimhood rhetoric signals he understands his legal jeopardy this time. Trump turns to GOP allies after learning he's a special counsel target. Caitlin Collins just tweeted that Trump truthed it. Okay, there it is. Okay, so there is no indictment. Trump says on social media that his attorneys have been informed that he has been indicted on federal criminal charges related to the Mar-a-Lago documents probe. Thank you, Tamara. ABC News reporting, Donald Trump indicted for second time. In a statement on social media, Trump insisted the case was a hoax.
I'm innocent.
Innocent as a newborn baby rat. Thank you, Steve, and Georgia Stan. So he's not been served. He knew he was, this article was from today at 8 a.m. Donald Trump's lawyers sent a strange letter to Attorney Steve Bannon, to Attorney General Merrick Garland last month. We knew about that. Their lawyer, their letter wanted a meeting
to discuss the ongoing injustice that is being perpetrated, believe me, by Jack Smith and his prosecutors.
And in fact, the lawyers did show up at the Justice Department and had a conversation. Merrick Garland wasn't there. And he threw Nitwit Nero threw a fit on Monday. Nitwit Nero's pettifoggers were told that Trump is a target of the classified documents investigation, according to two sources briefed on the meeting. Usually you don't get told that you're a target unless you're going to be indicted. And it was yesterday when Nitwit Nero went on his rickety little social media platform and whined,
"No one has told me I'm being indicted. And I shouldn't be, because I've done nothing wrong."
And now here it is.
Statement by Donald J. Trump, 45th President of the United States of America. "The corrupt Biden administration has informed my attorneys that I've been indicted, seemingly over the boxes hoax."
You have the right to remain silent, dipshit. You should try it sometime.
"Even though Joe Biden has 1,850 boxes at the University of Delaware, additional boxes in Chinatown, D.C., China, with even more boxes at the University of Pennsylvania, and documents strewn all over his garage floor where he parks his Corvette,"
it's a Trans Am, asshole, "I don't know,
and which is secured by only a garage door that is paper thin and open much of the time, I've been summoned to appear at the federal courthouse in Miami on Tuesday at 3 p.m. I never thought it possible that such a thing could happen to a former president of the United States who received far more votes than any sitting president in the history of our country, except Joe Biden."
I added that part.
"And is currently leading by far all candidates, both Democrat and Republican, in polls of the 2024 presidential election." All caps. "I am an innocent man. I am an innocent man. This is indeed a dark day for the United States of America. We are a country in serious and rapid decline, but together we will make America great again. Even if I'm in the joint."
Well, 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 well. Deep subject. I think he thinks he's still going to walk. Okay, let's get the poll started early. Who's got "he testifies in his own defense"? Who's got "no fucking way his lawyers will let him testify"? He was also whining today to the Supreme Trial Court in New York City, asking for, or no, the federal court, I'm sorry. The federal court in New York City asking for his damages to be reduced.
"Or a new trial. I'd like a new trial, please. Can I have a new trial? I'd like a new trial, yes."
Good God, the walls in Mar-a-Lago are painted red with ketchup. Lee noting, "Trump is a target? Yes, a rather significant 239-pound target." And
And there, yeah, there's another reference. I just saw an alert come across from CNN. Apparently, there are at least 7 counts to the indictment. He has to go to court next Tuesday. Okay, that's a solid bet, Ralphs. Donnie will testify and become demented. Oh, by the time the trial comes around, he'll be in a wheelchair with a blanket over his lap, and drooling profusely and unable to remember.
I can't remember that I don't recall what I don't have a recollection of.
Yeah. Well, your thoughts? Anybody? If you would actually like to talk about this, I mean, this has been a 2-hour and 45-minute filler obster, and God knows I... Well... yeah, thank you. Kevin says on Twitter, Ron Filipowski says Trump must report to federal court next Tuesday. That's what I'm seeing. The Independent, Trump says he's an innocent man as he's being indicted over secret documents case. That was, yeah. Oh, 1 second. Just a sec. Let me, okay. Hey, welcome to the program.
Yeah.
Micah?
It's Micah! Yep.
What's happening?
I almost wrecked my car hearing that news.
But don't do that.
I know, right? I gotta listen to this shit. I didn't think it was gonna happen. We were having a conversation with a bunch of my friends earlier today, and they were talking about, oh yeah, if he ever gets indicted. I'm like, yeah, I ain't laying bets on that. I'll believe it when I see it. I'm glad I didn't. I should have. 7 counts here, and these are felony, right?
Oh, yes. And apparently 7 counts thereof.
Oh, I cannot wait. I want to see him frog march. I want to see him frog march. I want to see him in jail.
Yes. Prison.
Behind some sort of bars. I mean, at this point, I'll take anything.
You're not choosy.
But here's the thing I do worry about, if I'm going to turn this serious for a second. Man, I hope they've got an airtight case, because if he somehow manages to weasel out of it, this is going to inflame his face.
Jack Smith is no slouch. I don't know why we're echoing.
Oh, probably because I'm in my car.
Okay, but no, Jack Smith is no slouch, and the federal and the feds, the U.S. attorneys generally don't indict unless they do have an airtight case.
Well, I hear you, but you know what they say about shooting the king.
Yeah. Well. And Jack Smith is the guy to shoot that shot. The thing is,
he may be able to be convicted on nothing but his own words, his own admissions.
Well, we don't even know that this document actually exists, right?
It's documents. It's not just one.
Oh, I thought this was mainly about that one with a
We don't know, but the fact of the matter is there were oodles of documents. And a bunch of them marked classified.
Gotcha. Well, I didn't think I'd ever see that happen.
I have a feeling that this will work out to, in the short run, he'll make money off of it, which is, of course, always a goal. And I'm also concerned, and I'm also concerned that the maggots will lose their tiny collective minds.
Well, that's what I was saying earlier. It's going to inflame his base. This is going to be a problem. It can't be helped. It needs to happen. But, yeah, that I hope whoever's watching, you know, the domestic terrorism side of things is really paying attention right now.
Yes. This could get wild.
We'll have to keep an eye on it. I don't mean to call in drop, but like I said, I about ran myself into a guardrail. I was dancing in my car so hard. I thought I should share.
Well, I'm so glad you did. I am so very glad you did, because these moments are not meant for just solitary musings. So, you know, cherish the moment.
Oh, I definitely am. I mean, as much as you can cherish this sort of thing, I mean, let's face it. One of my presidents just got indicted. And I mean, he's not really my president, but he still was a former U.S. president. That's not a good look.
No, but the fact of the matter is, if we look at history dispassionately, this should not be the big deal that it is, because frankly, Richard Nixon should have been indicted 40 years ago. Well, 45 years ago.
Well, I better not be hearing anything about anybody about healing the nation.
Oh, no. No. Of course, Monkey Up is going to enjoy the hell out of this. Well, you've got to nominate me now, because he's going to be in the stir.
Yeah, but his approval rating has completely collapsed, hasn't it?
It's working its way there. Well, Micah, you go on and drive home and be safe, okay?
I'm actually driving up north. I left the house not too long ago, but I can tell you all about that later.
Okay, sounds good. Listen, take care.
Take care and enjoy another treat tonight.
Indeed, indeed. See you, Micah.
Bye.
Bye. Oh, the Schadenfreude is delicious. Caution, this is coming from him. I don't believe it if it's coming from him, Darlene says. I understand, but this is different than being indicted in New York in state court. It was ephemeral. Apparently, he says he has been... If he has to go to the U.S. courthouse in Miami, he's not going there for negotiations. That's why the lawyers went to D.C. And that's why the lawyers were told, your client is a target. Those words have a very specific meaning. Now, Billable Rick jumping in on the Trump won't testify side of the wager. I mean, Billable, you know, you do trial work. Would you, if you had a client like him, would you let him get anywhere near the stand? I mean, it would approach legal malpractice to let him testify about anything. So we'll I know what we're talking about on the front porch tomorrow, everybody. And then we'll wait and find out on Tuesday. As Matt in San Francisco said, and I associate myself with Matt's remarks, he's turning himself in on Tuesday. Two dead and one charged. Pride Month is off to a good start. Isn't it just? Well, you know, we have the power of volcanoes and earthquakes, and some people just can't learn. All right, that's the program, but wow, it ended with a bang. Thanks for joining in. I do appreciate it. I so enjoy the camaraderie. Jude says, the wheels of justice turn slowly but grind exceedingly fine. Ah, yes, keep the faith.
Oh, come on, Robin. Why don't you want to heal the nation, you neo-belligerent shill?
Cowbell. Hey, Emilio. There will be more to talk about tomorrow. So y'all keep your eyes peeled. I'll do the same thing. And by the way, Randy Radar said, you know, for the Trump base, it's not really about Trump. It's about maintaining the white privilege to guard against the browning of America. If Trump's out of the picture, they'll go for some other bigoted dude. And even if Trump does get convicted, he'll bargain so as to not serve jail time, but the result will be so as to not be eligible to serve in public office again. And then he'll pray for the pardon. Or there's always the possibility he'll say, yeah, nice try. Look what I've got. I pardoned myself before I left office. Game, set, match. Thank you, Emilio. Emilio got us to only $5 away from Ralph's challenge. Thank you so much. So that's the program. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to our PayPal and Patreon subscribers. Thank you to our a la carte contributors. Thank you, Christopher, this evening. Thank you, Emilio. Thank you to Ralph's for the challenge. Thanks to each and every one of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever manner you so choose. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thank you for the update there, Steve in Georgia Stan. Thank you, Roger. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa. HeadOn.live. Remember, please, wherever you take the podcast, like and subscribe, follow, comment, share it on social media. Let people know what a unique community we have here. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you, Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Cold River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, 20-plus years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights, and a proud union shop. Stay safe. The maggots may lose their shit over this. Get your boosters. They'll probably be heavily mouth-breathing, so that's a lot of airborne particulates. Wash your hands. Wear your mask.
especially if you're around maggots or in a maggot state. Use your hand sanitizer, maintain your social distance. And if a 239-pound orange wad of adipose tissue and petty grievances comes shambling down the sidewalk towards you, "I'm an innocent man," well, avoid the chief maggot like the plague, because he is. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you. Later.